But the cup has been handed out. The season is basically over. We're into draft season. We're into free agency season. We're into the GM season is what we're into. And joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN Hockey Insider, Chris Johnston. What's happening, CJ?
Not much. Didn't get to bed last night after that cup got handed out. So,
good,
not,
man.
Not going to be 100% for this hit today.
No, that's all right. Good, man. Like, you saw it up close and personal. It, from our vantage point up here, it looked like, even though the score didn't dictate that or indicate it, that Colorado just completely dismantled Tampa last night.
Yeah, I think they just finally took the last bit of gas that was left in them and vanquished it because, you know, they just didn't have any push in the third period. You know, you give credit to the Avalanche, obviously, for the way they took control of a one-goal game and allowed that to happen, but you would expect, under those circumstances, Tampa to have more than four shots in the final period. But, you know, I got to say, the Lightning, for me, I was blown away that they even stretched out their third run at this as long as they did with all the injuries they had and you know, missing Braden Point for a huge chunk of the playoffs. I thought that they pushed a pretty dynamic team in the Avalanche even farther than I thought they were going to be able to.
CJ, Brian and Noodles were talking earlier in the show. I don't know who it was from the Avalanche who said, looking back at our teams, we thought we were good and ready to win, but now that they've actually done it, those teams in the past, who was it, their coach or was it Landeskog?
There's McKinnon on the ice last night.
McKinnon. So McKinnon says, looking back at those teams, we weren't ready to win. So if you could put it into words what you watched with these guys, what was it that you think changed?
Well, I think a couple things. They, you know, they added a little bit more beef on their blue line. You know, they were a team with a lot of puck movers back there, and I think that they changed up the mix. And then, you know, it's hard to ignore their depth. I mean, they scored more than four goals a game, I believe, on average through the playoffs. And they had just a, you know, really three high-end lines that could score goals for them. And so, you know, it's probably those two things. And then just the mindset of being through it and figure out how hard it is. I mean, as much as, you know, I think we would all agree Colorado is clearly the better team and deserves to win that Stanley Cup. I mean, there's lots of moments where it can go off the rails. They lose, you know, game five at home and start to feel a little bit of pressure. They're down early in game six. You know, there's moments in that series where if you don't have the right focus then and to find a way to push through, you know, they won two games in the series in overtime. It was still close, even though, you know, I think that they were the fresher, better, more determined team ultimately, when it got to the final. So, you know, I think you're probably leading me down the road to, you know, how do some teams, whether it's the Leafs or the Oilers or other teams, maybe even the Hurricanes that have been really good at times in a regular season, but not really had a whole lot to show for it in the playoffs. How do they get there? You know, I think it's just, there's a process, you know, for top players to learn how to play in those moments. And then obviously getting the right mix with your team. And that's going to change from year to year because of the cap.
CJ, you mentioned Tampa being beat up. You know, Patrick Maroon in his media afterwards last night was visibly emotional, but also said something that kind of resonated where he said, you guys are going to be shocked and blown away when the injury list comes out. And even I believe John Cooper said, you know, if it was regular season, half their team would have been on the IR and they would have played with half the minor league team. Is there any leaks or anything coming out of, you know, how serious a lot of these injuries were? Because they were basically, it was a parade down the tunnel. Every shift, it seemed like these guys were having something dealt with or something frozen, that type of stuff. And Colorado was nicked up by the end as well, with Nichushkin wearing the sandal. Burakovsky, you know, it sounds like he had a broken foot and a broken hand. So there's lots of injuries on both sides.
Right, and then you got Kadri too. Yeah. Turned a six-week prognosis for his recovery into two, and couldn't take any face-offs. And I actually saw his hand last night. It looked gruesome after his surgery. I mean, yeah, that's the price of it. I think Tampa, they're going to have to put out like a booklet to document the whole thing. It sounds like, you know, pretty significant injury to Point. I guess that's self-evident in the sense that he missed four games of the Stanley Cup final, and we know what a competitive player he is, that it would have to be something serious to keep him out. You know, I'd been hearing that Cirelli and Chernak, it was shocking that they were even playing because they did manage to get through the series, albeit, you know, Cirelli in limited minutes compared to what we would normally expect him to play. I even saw Stamkos walking out of the building last night after it, and he didn't look spry, put it that way. And I don't think it was just, you know, the fact that obviously the disappointment of losing the Stanley Cup final, you know, I'm sure it's right down the list. I don't recall a series, quite honestly, where that many players went down the tunnel. I mean, remember Kucherov left one of the games in the series with, you know, 4 or 5 minutes left. You know, Nick Paul left at one point and came back and then scored a goal. But you know, it might be basically the whole team at this point. And you know, it makes sense because of the way the Lightning play. They like to pack it in the middle and don't mind blocking shots and you know, sacrificing their body that way. And then you just look at the number of games they played in reaching 3 Stanley Cup finals inside 2 calendar years. Just no team has played as much hockey as they have through the pandemic. And I'm sure some combination of those two things led to them being so beat up by the end of it.
With Chris Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider. So this Timothy Liljegren deal, I'm assuming, has been in the shelf for a while. They're just waiting for the season to come to an end. He gets 2 years at $1.4 million. What is your reaction to that deal?
I think it's good value for, you know, what he is at this point in time. I mean, certainly very little risk from the Leafs end of things. And by getting 2 years, if he grows in, becomes more of a regular member of the lineup the next two seasons, I think, you know, it's going to look like a great deal for Toronto. And then we'll be fretting over what number they're going to sign him on beyond that. And, you know, I think the timing is interesting because, you know, they also have Rasmus Sandin, who doesn't have a contract. And, you know, it's sort of natural to lump these two guys together. They've got NHL experience under their belts, but, you know, haven't ever been, you know, full-time members of the team just yet. And I think one or both of them probably have to get to that point next year, just with where the Leafs cap situation is at. They're going to need some cheaper contributors. You know, Mark Giordano did them a favor with his contract, but they're going to need others. And you know, I'm curious to see how the Sandin situation plays out. I know they've talked to his agent. Doesn't sound like anything's close on that end. And I think there's still some uncertainty about whether Sandin is back with the team, just with them already having 3 guys who shoot left and are under contract ahead of them, and Giordano, Riley, and Muzzin. So, you know, it's the first step in a couple, but, you know, I think just viewing the Liljegren situation alone, that he was a pleasant surprise in some ways this season. And, you know, there's not very many defensemen that are paid at that level that can contribute. And I think there's hope, at least, that he'll be a contributor during those 2 years.
Yeah, I wonder what that means for Sandin. I'd have to believe Sandin's sitting there saying, well, he's going to have demand more than Liljegren got, and I think is worthy of more. So if he re-signs, what is that going to look like?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a higher number, or it's going to be 1 year deal, you know, which would set him up, you know, for a further raise down the road. I think, I still think he's wondering where he fits on the team, though, or if, you know, what the plans are for him. You know, do they move him to the right side, maybe? You know, it seems to me that there's like a little, I don't know if confusion's the right word, but there's just a little bit of uncertainty there. And, you know, I think he's also wondering if he might be traded. You know, I don't have any specific info on that happening. I do know some teams, or at least one team, asked around the deadline, and the Leafs didn't want to do that. I mean, obviously, I think that they're hoping his best years are still to come here in the next couple, and that he'll be ready to be, you know, step into a role with the team as maybe some other guys age out or get traded away. But, you know, right now, I do think that this was probably a big week as you get to the draft in Montreal next week. You know, I would expect there'll be more discussions with Sandin's agent and the Leafs and, you know, maybe clarify some of these things and get his signature on a contract. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of leverage. He can't file for arbitration, for example. I mean, all he could do is sit out training camp or something like that. But you know, that's a long ways off, and I don't think we should expect that.
CJ, we talked to you before the playoffs started, and correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, but you said you believed it would be the last year the Leafs would go at this with their kind of core four up front or their top four players. Are you coming off of that, or where are you at with that?
I'd say I'm coming off of that. You know, I'd be surprised now if they moved off one of them.
Why were you on it in the first place?
Well, I know I said something that I didn't mean it probably as strong as it came out. But I, you know, I think that there were some questions at the time. You know, ultimately, I just, you know, and I know we're going to try to hype up the trade deadline or sort of the draft and all the trades are going to happen there. I just think you're not going to trade away, for example, William Nylander and get better back for the money he's paid. And so I think that they're going to stick with it. I mean, I don't have any reason to believe otherwise. You know, I think in the past they've gauged the market there, and it's just not. There's been nothing that remotely made sense, and so I don't see the conditions changing. You know, there's still a lot of other changes that are going to the team's going to look quite different. You know, obviously the forward lines I think will be, or the depth forwards will be different. We were wondering with the goaltending, but you know, I don't see the top four guys at the forward position changing before next season. And, you know, they're going to give it one more go. It's going to be tough because it's similar to last summer where I think they actually did a reasonably good job. There's not a ton of cap space when you start handing out these deals and figuring out, you know, how they're going to fill out the roster.
Do you think the Nazem Kadri story would leave scar tissue to the point where Dubas and company would be afraid to make a move like the one we're suggesting here?
You know, possibly. You know, that's probably, I think it's the move we can point to that is the, at least in my view, the biggest misstep that they made. You know, I understand how they got to that conclusion. In the sense that they just felt to some degree that they didn't know if they could trust them when it got to big games because of what had happened in those two series with Boston. But, you know, at the end of the day, he was a cost control player, you know, who was already delivering better value on his deal in real time, but was also a good bet to keep doing that for the next two or three seasons from when they traded him. And, you know, it didn't work out with Barry. I think Kerfoot's been fine, but certainly doesn't give you the value that Kadri would have. And so, I think that there's a bit of a cautionary element there. I mean, when you go into any offseason and say, we have to do this, and I think they did that with Kadri, you know, they identified him as someone that they had to move, and, you know, they wanted to get a defenseman and get to a hole at the time in return for him. You know, it just didn't work well. And I believe the rumored trades with Calgary that Kadri turned down before he went to Colorado wouldn't have served them any better either. So, you know, I think there is some, a lesson in what not to do with maybe the approach to how that trade went down.
CJ, you mentioned the word different, maybe the bottom of the roster. Is that, you know, we talked earlier in the 4 o'clock hour, it's a copycat league, but you're not copying Colorado and just Cale Makar magically appearing. So, you know, if you're the Maple Leafs, you're looking at, you mentioned, you know, trading Nylander, and that was just a hypothetical. You know, you're not going to get the same back or the same type of value. But the bottom of the roster, I would say, needs to look different. And I mean different is, you may not have a guy as talented to score goals, but you should be harder to play against. Is that something that maybe you get a sense that Kyle would shift his mentality on? Or is it just kind of going to be the same type of value contracts that contribute and chip in offensively and they roll back with the same philosophy to try and win and get deep in the playoffs?
I think it's going to be a similar philosophy, but, you know, part of that philosophy is trying to find competitive guys.
Right.
You know, like none of them, I don't think we're going to be talking about headliner signings on July 13th or 14th with the Leafs. You know, there'll be ones that, you know, everyone goes, okay. But, you know, at times, for example, David Camp was useful last year, and he was an under-the-radar signing for them, just in the role he was used in, I mean. And so I think it'll be more like that. And, you know, part of, no one probably wants to hear this, but I think fundamentally the Leafs believe in what they're doing. And they feel that there will be a different result if they get another chance at it, that a lot of teams that have fallen short, you know, just keep rolling back and making adjustments and hope their top guys start to figure it out, like McKinnon said, on the ice and break through. And so, you know, I don't see a huge change in philosophy here. I mean,
yeah.
The biggest thing is goaltending. I mean, that's the whole, I mean, they've, you know, they let the goalie coach go. They're very likely would look to have two new goaltenders. So, I mean, that's going to be the biggest change. But otherwise, I think they're going to keep doing the same things they've done and hope it turns out differently next spring.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I see it going here also. I mean, I think using the Liljegren example, it's nothing against him in a bubble, but I said this earlier, CJ, like if he's going to be the equivalent of Zach Bogosian or Eric Johnson, I don't see him giving that value. He can't grow to 6'3", 240 between now and game one. And that's what, like, these two teams have done. They're like, if we're going to have a guy playing 14 minutes, he better be a monster that soaks up a ton of ice and hits everything and kills penalties. Liljegren will never be that. Never. But I think Dubas looks at it and goes, he's poised with the puck and smart, and that'll work. And maybe he's right. And if he is, he will puff his chest out, and he will deserve it, and he will deserve every accolade he's ever going to get in the future. And believe me, I hope he's right more than anyone. But 100 years of history would say he's trying to do something that not a lot of other teams have done with success.
So, right. It's fair. You know, and look, Bogosian's was maybe the smallest D on Tampa.
Right.
And I remember he was the beefy guy in Toronto last year. So, you know, there's definitely a difference there. And you know, maybe there's a room to have more Lyubushkin-type players and physical guys brought in. I mean, and that would probably require a trade of one or both of the young Ds.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting, like what value they have and what they feel like they could flip. You know, like Sandin, if you were to go on the market, I don't know what his value is league-wide. He's, you know, maybe you're the guy to ask. Like, what do you think would be a reasonable asking price if they got to a point where they decided they were going to flip Sandin?
I don't have a strong sense either, right? He's an unproven commodity.
Right.
You know, he's not at the point where Travis Dermott was, right? Like, you'd seen him play more games when they dealt him to Vancouver and didn't get much of a return, just a draft pick. But, you know, I think that Sandin's still young enough and does show you something with the way he skates and moves the puck that, you know, if you're maybe another team's prospect, you know, it's almost like a one-for-one, similar type of players, you know, that could work. But, you know, he's not a massive commodity, I don't think, at this point in time, because it was 4 or 5 years after his draft year, 4 years, I guess, and we still don't totally know what he is yet.
Nope. We don't. We'll find out, though. All right, CJ, get some sleep, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
All right, be well, guys.
Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, we'll see, man. The Leafs are, they're always a fascinating follow. And obviously here in Toronto, we'll be all over it. And what CJ said doesn't surprise me. Dubas, I think he's a believer in where he's going, what he's got. I know he's got a ton of talent. I fully expect him to be a very good team next year. But I'd like to see some sort of an adjustment between now and next year where they say, all right, this is something that we can change and we will change. Right?
Right.
Like, if it's just, got unlucky, what are you going to do? Okay. You know, we'll see. I hope it works.
I wouldn't plan on it, Bobby.
Well, they had 12 guys, I think, that had career years. Do you think everyone's going to have a career year next year? Like, that's the thing. Like, it's they had 115 points. Do you see them at 117, 120, or is they?
Well, I don't think that matters as much as long as you get in. But I understand what you're saying. I don't expect them. I don't think they'll win the President's Trophy. Maybe they do. I don't know. But
I think the way that this team is constructed, they've got to identify if this team can be battle tested to win 16 games in the playoffs. And while it's fresh in our mind, with that roster that we saw in game, we'll call game 7 against Tampa, could you see that team go on and hold up against Colorado? I don't personally. So, like, they need to change a few things. It's not trade William Nylander just for the sake of trading him. They might have to have, you know, be a lot harder to play against at the bottom of their roster and have a philosophy change in how you want to play. Because those teams were able to adapt. But like I say, who's the JT Compher? Who's the Cogliano and Helm and those guys? Like, it's you know,
they never can afford to get them at the deadline, Jamie.
But I'm just saying, and it's easy for us to do it right now while it's fresh in our mind. And they're, you know, the Leafs have been done for 2 months. But that has to be part of Kyle's thought process on how, you know, how these teams won a Stanley Cup and how Tampa was that close. If the Leafs are close to what those rosters look like, if you believe with some talent there, then that's how you want to build them. You know, if that makes sense.
Well, yes, I agree. But
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, Joe Sack, what does he know? Julian Brisebois. Well,
those guys, if John Tavares is paid in their model to be a 100-point guy and be dominant and be one of the best players on the ice and create a matchup that's unheard of. So if he's not that, then you're starting at a disadvantage to begin with.
But that's the guy. I'm glad we brought him up, because there's so much focus on Matthews, Marner, Nylander. There's a guy that should be hungrier than anyone else and willing to change more than anyone else. That money's already guaranteed. He's made a fortune his whole career. He's scored a boatload of career goals his whole career. If there's one guy that should be looked upon as the leader of someone who's going to show up and block every shot, throw hits for the first time really in his career, drop the gloves if you have to, it's him. Yeah. It should be him. Like, you look at it last night against Stamkos, blah, blah, blah. But Stamkos, you know, has had a similar career. You know, little differences, but he has changed into this block. That hit he threw on McKinnon last night was a big hit.
Almost knocked him through the boards. He was
big hit. I have not seen Tavares throw a hit like that. And I don't need to see it during the regular season. But build towards it and come playoff time, if you're not going to score, if you can't keep up all the time, you better be blocking every shot. You better be demanding to take every big draw. Like, you, he has to. He has to. Yeah. And, you know, that's something we got to see out of John Tavares. You know, like, because let's be honest, in the playoffs, like this playoff, it was a 7-game playoff. He got better as the playoff went on. Early in that round, he wasn't great. And, you know, he's a guy that kind of just plays the same all the time. He doesn't change his disposition in the playoffs. And I think you have to. You got to change your attitude. You have to.
That's why we were talking at the start of this, you know, show about Nazem Kadri. You know, his attitude. He brings that chip. He brings that confidence, that cockiness, and he wants to be a difference maker and, you know, do whatever it takes to win. And we saw what happened.